Hey everybody, you're listening to Top Quartile, where we bring you stories from the front lines of growth in community-focused financial services.
Hello everybody, I'm Dan Marks. I'm the Park Earn EVP here. And I've got a great guest today, Drew Neiser, who I've known for a number of years in different contexts. I'm really excited to have Drew on the show. So Drew, good morning. How are you?
Hey Dan, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your role, and in particular, some of the newer stuff you've done with CMO Huddles and the book you've got coming out.
So lots going on, and it's sort of amazing that all of this sort of happened during the pandemic. But first role is founder and CEO of Renegade. And I wish I could say that like I was the classic CEO that was the visionary that set the vision and then just let everybody else do it. That's my advice to all of you, by the way. As a leader, that's what you need to do. That's not what I do. What I do is the stuff that I love, which is marketing strategy and coming up with these purpose-driven story statements and market research that will help create some news. And so I'm a player manager, not just a leader kind of person. So that's part one. And that has sort of led me and kept me very active in this world of marketing. I interview at least one CMO every week and have been doing that for 10 years. And that's led me to this book. That's led me to what we started in the pandemic. And I'll tell you more about CMO Huddles in the context of the book later on. But basically, I just have sort of stayed, I'm going to say, by being a perpetual learner, it's just kept me in the game for a long time.
Love it. Yeah. So fantastic conversations come out of that. Drew, what is one sort of fascinating personal fact that most people don't know about you?
I may be the only guest that you've ever had who had a Ben Franklin bobblehead. I'm absolutely obsessed with Ben Franklin. It's a bizarre sort of thing. I probably read 35, 36 books. You can see him behind me. I actually spent a day in Paris tracking Ben Franklin's path around Paris, where he did what many would believe would be impossible. He marketed a revolution to a king and thus enabled the U.S. to sort of really, he funded the war that allowed us to win the revolution. So I call him America's chief marketing officer. And this obsession happened probably more than 10 years ago, I'm going to say around 2008, when I was actually looking for support for this idea that at the time we were calling marketing as service. And he had an expression, which is well done is better than well said. And that's the one that hit me, you know, pardon the pun, but like a lightning bolt, because that was the moment where I realized as much as I am obsessed with words, it is about actions. And that's what marketing really boils down to.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a Ben Franklin bobblehead on the show.
You know, and you might not even know anybody else who owns one. And that's, you know, that's, I don't know if it's fascinating, but it is bizarre.
Well, that's part of fascinating, right? So,
okay.
And a great story behind it. So, Drew, you are really passionate about all things marketing, but a particularly passionate about the B2B side of the aisle or the playbook. You know, a lot of times B2C gets a lot of the attention and the buzz. So, talk about why do you love B2B so much?
Well, I think it helps to sort of give you a little background. Renegade has had a number of lives, okay? We started really as a B2C firm in support of Panasonic, but we also then got some B2B work because we launched the Tough Book. Anyway, fast forward to 2008. At that moment, I decided brilliantly to buy Dentsu out. That was the company that I founded Renegade with. And in buying them out, I managed to time it perfectly. The closing date was October 31st, 2008. So we're right at the beginning of the worst recession since 1929. 70% of our business was walking out the door. And we got stiffed later $500,000 from one of our clients who lost money due to the Madoff scandal. So anyway, we had this really crazy moment where we had to sort of look in the mirror and say, who do we want to be when we grow up and also to survive? So we looked at the market, we said, we got to narrow our focus and we decided to focus on B2B because at that moment, B2B meant business to boring. And we thought we could do better.
Yeah, I get because at that time in particular, and it's changed a little bit, probably in part by your influence, you know, B2B marketing was the brochure that you gave your sales team who was you know, walking around cold calling and or knocking on doors. Right.
It's true. And I have to say, this book came out by Raja Rajamannar. That's really a great book called Quantum Marketing. But he gives one chapter to B2B. And I think there's a lot of arrogance still in the B2C world that B2B marketers just aren't as sophisticated. And I think they're really missing a lot in that where B2B marketing has excelled is in the area of marketing automation, in the science part of marketing, and they're probably way ahead of the consumers. But where they're still falling short is in the art. So what I wanted to do with the book was really sort of get at that and help. I mean, what we identified as a major problem in B2B marketing in the last 4 years is that it got ridiculously complicated. They got so good at the technology that all the energy went into optimizing every little thing. But when you asked marketers, so tell me about your business in 8 words or less, 40% could do it, 60% couldn't. When you asked marketers if their brand, if their product was different, they said, oh yeah, 60% of their product was different. And I said, well, is your marketing different? No. So we said, wait. Marketing by definition is supposed to cut through. It needs to differentiate your product. How is it that happens? So B2B marketers got way ahead in terms of automation and the science of it, but they completely lost sight of the art of marketing. And so this book was trying to fix that and figure out how do we radically simplify this to get back to the art and have some balance in this world.
And so the book you're talking about is the book that comes out October 5th. And what's the title?
The title is Renegade Marketing, 12 Steps to Building Unbeatable B2B Brands.
There you go. What an unbeatable title. and so I was fortunate. You asked me to review an advanced copy of the book, and which I thought was really well done, as so much of your stuff is, Drew. One of the really kind of interesting core ideas was this CATS methodology, which is not a pet thing.
No, it's definitely not a pet thing. So the CATS thing actually came up with this from the first book that I wrote, which is the CMO's Periodic Table, which featured 64 marketers, including some dude named Dan Marks. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, that book came out in 2015. And after I wrote it and started doing speaking engagements, people said, so Drew, what are the, I can't deal with 64, narrow it down. Tell me what the traits are. And so looking at it then and sort of thinking about it and analyzing it, we got to CATS, which is courageous, artful, thoughtful, and scientific. And those four characteristics in a blend as a framework for the rest of the, and then, so anyway, we kept doing interviews, kept sort of finding courageous marketers to talk to, learn more about the artfulness and what that really meant, sort of thought about thoughtfulness in a lot more detail. And that led to this process that we developed basically in like 2018. And that process, which had the CATS framework and the 12 steps, our goal was to try to break it. Like, let's apply it and break it and then fix it and then break it and then keep doing research to do it. And so that's how the CATS framework, courage, artful, and how we got to the 12 steps. They actually came together. It's like the four became the 12 steps. And if you look at in the book, there are three steps under each of the courageous, artful, thoughtful, and scientific. So it's a nice, neatly organized package.
Obviously, we're just going to give a touch on the book. We're not going to go all the way to the 12, but what does courageous mean?
This goes back to how hard it is to be a CMO. And you know this, you've been a CMO, and you actually, I would argue, made it look easy, because in the book, my first book, we actually talked about how you developed this attribution model and how that really helped you. A lot of CMOs haven't done that. And this is a hard, hard job. And we did a survey. I think it was actually, we didn't do the survey. There was a survey last year that 49% of CMOs wanted to quit, period. Just wanted to quit. And we already know that the tenure is hard. And so it takes courage, really, frankly, just to take the job. But then it takes courage because of all the demands on a CMO to say no to all but a little bit of really to focus. I mean, that's what is so hard about the job is you've got, hey, I want you to do this. I want you to do that. I want you to do this. And I want you to do it all yesterday. And right. So the courageous marketer can sort of say, no, these are the things we're going to do. These are the order in which we're going to do them. And, you know, when you see that happen, it's unbelievable. And I'd love to give you a couple examples. One of the things that's really hard in financial services is it's a regulated industry. So how do you differentiate your brand? It's really hard. But I know you know the story of State Street Financial and Stephen Tisdale, but there was a moment in 2016 or 17 where they said, you know what, we're going to create a fund called the She Fund, and that fund is going to be focused on companies that have women on their boards because we believe that it'll outperform the market. Well, sure enough, it did. So in, I think it was 2019 or so, Stephen Tisdale had this idea that they were going to put this statue, this little fearless girl statue, who's in across from the famous Wall Street Bull, and it was supposed to be there for like a week, literally a week. And the night before, he was terrified. He was so afraid that no one was going to notice. And of course, you plan for the, you know, expect the worst, plan for the best. He didn't. They had planned for the worst. And it turned out this thing went viral. They had 5 billion social mentions of this thing in a few weeks, which was extraordinary. And the thing that was so interesting about this is it wasn't just a stunt, because they did it on International Women's Day and they put this statue out there, but there was meat behind it. And remember I said, well done is better than well said. The actions that they took were to write to 250 boards in the US and say, hey, you don't have any women on your boards, why not? Wrote to those same public companies in Japan, you don't have any women on your board. Sure enough, they actually got results. Now, the courage part of this continues in this sense. One of the things that happens when you make a statement like that is that suddenly people turn around and look at you and say, hey, yeah, are you guys being, and sure enough, that's what happened to them. And they got some pushback. And rather than sort of saying, oh, wait, we got to back away from this, they embraced it and they said, you're right, we can do better. And so they looked at their management team and increased the number of women. They looked at their diversity plan program and addressed that. So one of the aspects of courage in marketing and doing something extraordinary is being prepared that, you know, you might get pushback, and that's good news.
Yeah.
Because somebody paid attention, right? That's really good news. And so taking a chance, having the courage, and I love the story of Fearless Girl because it started as a week. Within 3 days, someone else, another organization, was petitioning to have it stay there for a year. And now it lives still, several years later, it lives across from the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, this was supposed to be a 1 week promotion.
And it turned into something enduring.
That's sort of courage on a multiple levels, but it really does speak to all the dimensions that we look for. Keep it simple. Think about this, a statue that says nothing, no words at all.
Yeah.
But the action spoke volumes.
Yeah. And it's a great example of, to your point about courage, is you do have to focus. You can't do everything that's possible of doing. And that is, frankly, one of the hardest parts about marketing. Like you said, the CMO role is to narrow down what are you going to do, what are you not going to do. But then, and this is tough in financial services, is recognizing that sometimes when you do things to stand out, there is pushback. And that's part of the deal. It's not, you know, that's not a bug. That's a feature, if you will.
See, this is the thing. So many marketers are risk averse. It's like, wait, this is the wrong role. You're in the wrong business.
So how does artful relate to courage, and maybe how is it different in B2B than B2C?
So I play with this word artful quite a bit and bend it. And I'm grateful to have a word that's so flexible in the English language that's so flexible, because there's a lot of components to artful. And I think, and I can get to the B2C versus B2B part of it in it. But so the first part of the CMO role is this notion of welcoming we and realizing you're not the star of this show. And the sooner you realize that, and it, you know, that I think a wise man once said, it's amazing how much you can get done if you let others get the credit, right?
Yeah.
That's this role. And so welcoming we is the first part of artfulness, is being a really good communicator such that this world of your organization can embrace your idea, or the organization's idea even better. So that's part one of this. And then the next part is sort of perfecting pithy. And this is where I think financial services and frankly, most marketers miss. And I mentioned earlier, we surveyed over 200 CMOs over a 2-year period and asked them how many could describe their business in 8 words or less. It's like 40% max. And you go, wait, what? How is that possible? And now I know you could say, well, I'm a bank, but that's not a story. that's a what, right? So right. How do you perfect pithy and get your brand story, ideally in a purpose basis, down to 8 words or less? So that's part of this artfulness that we talk about. And then the third component of this is delight by design. And this is where most CEOs and boards think about marketing. Oh, it's just when you use the word brand, they say, oh, well, that's a new logo and a new color. And that's a problem in our industry and an understanding of marketing. Those things are important. But I put that sort of third on the list of artfulness, because if you don't have the story down, if you don't have a community built around of embracing your idea internally, you're going to fail. Assuming you've done those, then the opportunity to delight by design. I'm going to say one other thing on that issue, which is most often brands rebrand. So it's a bank. They say, oh, we need a new logo. We're just tired of it. We need a new color. Everybody's blue and red. We're going to be purple, right? We're going to be the purple bank. Okay, great. Okay. They don't change anything else. Nothing. Yeah. They just say, we're going to be purple instead of blue. And this happens all the time. And I call that the sort of, old barn, new paint syndrome. So, you put a new coat of paint on the old barn. The barn has not changed at all, right? It just hasn't. And then, the welcome we part of it is you put this old coat of paint on there and you don't tell the farmer and you don't tell the cows and they just get covered in the paint. Nothing good happens. So this notion of marketing it and with delight by design, you're doing those changes when you have some other product news to share, right? You've changed something. And that's the thing about marketing is if you stop at the message, you've really failed. And this is why I really think marketers can change the world, but they have to embrace the fact that it's not just marketing what they're given.
Yeah.
They need to help drive something that is truly differentiated in their organization.
So you're saying a marketer's job is not to put lipstick on a pig.
There you go. No, I mean, look, lipstick is great and pigs are great, but they're still pigs and it just doesn't work, but it happens all the time. And that, so I truly believe, we go back to the courage part of this thing. You have to have the courage to say, no, this is lipstick on a pig. Why are we doing that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it really speaks to, we had a guest on the show recently, Aaron Chestnut, that talked about it. The big part of the brand is your actions. And so what are you true? And it ties to purpose and values and all those things. Like, what is the unique offering of the company? Why does the company exist to make something better for customers, members, and all the other stakeholders? And so then how does the more visible part of the marketing, the messaging and all those other important parts of the brand amplify what is most true and most valuable?
All of that, completely agree. And I have just put a punctuation point on the purpose part of it. So, in banking and financial services, it is really hard to differentiate on product. I know that. But you can differentiate on purpose. And I tell the story in the book about Bank of the West. And how they went out on a limb and said, we're not going to take money from oil companies and companies that are doing fracking and other things that we think are environmentally bad. And that cost them $1.5 billion of business in a few sort of Midwestern states. But in California and Colorado, man, their assets skyrocketed. So interestingly, they took it, they really went all in on purpose, and it made a huge difference for employees, which is again part of this thing that CMOs right now, there's this phenomenon of just people quitting, right? Yeah. People just quitting. I mean, something like 3.5 million people last year just quit their jobs. It's crazy. And if you don't have a purpose, it's really easy for companies to say, well, I don't really care. I don't care about the company.
Yeah.
So this is where, again, marketers' role on the C-suite is so much more important, because they can drive purpose assuming, and this is a big assumption, they can also drive demand. You don't get a seat at the table until you show you can drive demand.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the things I really love about our working with our clients is every single one of our clients has usually a community focused purpose of some kind. And so then you take that inspiring purpose and then you add some very targeted amplification of data and analysis and performance driven marketing that just helps them accelerate that purpose. And that's a great combination. So we've talked about art. We've talked about courage, art. What about thoughtful?
Thoughtful starts with this notion that we're in a give to get economy, right? And just think about some of the biggest brands out there. Google gives you search. You give them eyeballs, right?
Yeah.
Facebook gives you social network. You give them eyeballs. This is a give to get economy. And people are trained now that they know, you want free broadcast television, you get to watch the commercials. I mean, there's an exchange of value in everything, in all of these things. And so the marketer that gets that says, oh, all right, what are the thoughtful things that I can do that will bring my purpose, as we call it, purpose-driven story statement, to life? We talk about something called a plan on a page. We want every marketer, every B2B marketer, to say, all right, we have three targets: employees, customers, and prospects. In that order, by the way, employees, customers, and prospect. And we want you to come up with six ideas for each of those segments that stick to the original idea. And this is the opposite of what you see. You'll see a business, you'll see a marketing plan that has 18 different things and none of them are connected. So when we talk about thoughtfulness, we're talking about six things that you can do that will help employees and support this notion that you're, whatever your brand promise is, whatever your purpose-driven story statement is. And what's funny is in the research that we did about, I mentioned this flip of from prospects to employees being the first target. Most CMOs will agree. They'll say, yep, 90% of CMOs in our survey said employees are really important. When you launch a new campaign, employees are really important. Then you say, how much time do you allow? Less than like 10% allowed more than 2 months. Okay.
Yeah.
Before to train and to launch it. So what that tells me is nothing new happened. It's lipstick on a pig. And by way of example, Aetna, when they went to market with a new promise, they spent 6 months training their employees on how to make the new promise real.
Yeah.
So that to me is thoughtful on a large scale because you're thoughtfully helping the employees understand what the new promise is. You're making them part of the new promise. You're training them to do it. So if your new brand launch, you come up with this great idea, we got this great, these words are so magical, and we got a new color, and we got a perfect spokesperson, and we're going to market, and you do nothing with employees, you're saying nothing. You're really, everybody will see right through it. So engaging the first part of thoughtfulness is going to your employees and talking to them. And in the book, I provide an easy employee survey to benchmark. We want every CMO to do that the first week they're on the job. The first week, because they can say, hey, I care about what you think. You guys know the business better than I do. Get to every single employee and say, we want your opinion. That's the way, that's a thoughtful thing that a CMO can do right away. Part two of this is cultivating customer champions. And you know this, and I know this, that this is important. But again, do the research. You find that, are brands really cultivating customer champions? Does the executive committee, do they have executive sponsors of clients? Not that many of them do that. That's so easy though, right? You have one client that you're really responsible for. As a marketer, that means you get to know a client. You can call them. They will help you. So there's a lot going on here, and I could talk a little bit more about selling through service, but I'm going to pause because I know I've sort of long-winded here.
Yeah, no, it's a great example. And obviously, we can't cover everything in the book. That's why people need to read the book. So the last one, scientific, and obviously, I love all of these, but maybe love this one the most. What are your thoughts on how does scientific play, particularly in B2B?
So let's first sort of set this frame up. So courageous is an internal thing. This is you having the courage to take the job and be pithy, artful is the way that you communicate to the world at, you know, in terms of how you set up your program. Thoughtful is execution, right? It's being really smart about execution. All those things are terrific. But the reality is, if you don't have the science, you're dead in the water. I mean, it's like no metrics, no dashboard, no budget, no tenure. I mean, it's really a straight line to that. And that's not news to anybody, okay? But what we tried to do in the book, and this is where science gets really interesting, is there's several things. First of all, you ask the average marketer how many metrics they have, and it's 50. And you ask the biggest complaint from board of directors about their CMOs, too many metrics. Too many. And so it's crazy how many they look at. And what we really focus on is getting the right metrics. And obviously that's about alignment with your CEO, but only 20% of CEOs ever worked in marketing.
Yeah.
So that means chances are 4 out of 5 CMOs are reporting to a CEO who never worked in marketing. So the CMO has to educate them and come with the business case. You don't need 50 metrics and you're looking at the wrong ones. If we're just being measured by leads, come on. Marketing does a lot more than that. So the way we try to do it is say there's 4 metric buckets, 2 in each, and you get 2 metrics only, 8. That's it, 8 KPIs, 2 for employees, 2 for customers, 2 for prospects, and 2 for brand health. The reason why, and this is another one, again, you ask marketers, how many of you have brand health studies? Most of them say no. And it's shocking, because what happens in a downturn? What happens when there's a pandemic? You have nothing there to show the strength of the brand. Brand health is the long-term asset, right?
Yeah.
And it's not that hard to measure. And most of them say it's too expensive. So in the book, we provide simple ways of creating blended metrics that you can do on the cheap. And so the last part of this that I'll say on the scientific part is once you get the metrics right, and this is where it's crazy in B2B. You talk to a lot of marketers have more than 25, some have 50 different technologies in their stack, and they're really proud of their tech stack, right? Oh, I got 28 in my stack. And then you ask them to do an audit of that, and they'll say, oh, we're really using 12 of them well.
Oh.
And they're paying for 16 others, which means that over 10% of their marketing budget is going into technology. Technology is not marketing. It's not. It's just technology, and this is a problem. So you spend all this money on technology so you can get this one last answer, so you can have one more digit in your report, which you don't need. And then the last thing is this culture, building a culture of experimentation and testing to triumph. And this really was important during the pandemic. So we encourage marketers to have 10 to 20% of their budget in experimentation. Not a surprise. Yeah. A lot of marketers will say, yeah, that's a pretty good number. But here's the interesting thing. If you had that going like Carolyn Tien Spaulding did, where she had 20% of her dollars in some digital program and 80% in physical events, come March 2020, she could flip the switch and she was ready.
Yeah.
Because she had this thing that she could do. Now, she didn't plan it that way. It just worked out. But she always spends 20% of her dollars on experimentation. So this is where these pieces come together, and being scientific is a no-brainer. Doing it right takes a lot of this courage and art and thoughtfulness.
Yeah, yeah, very well said. It takes the discipline to actually do it.
Yeah, yeah, and making sure you get the right metrics. I mean,
right.
You know, there are so many available, and it's really easy to get impressed by them.
Yeah, yeah, then that. I think that's one thing that we enjoy is as we work with clients in a particular industry, we're able to help them have some context, those metrics, and not just, okay, what do my metrics say, but what are they, you know, how do they compare to others? And that's helpful.
Yeah.
External perspective.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the advantages you have is you're focused on a vertical. And this is the thing, you have focus inherently in your business, and you ask a lot of CMOs, where's your focus?
Yeah.
And we got 900 products. Wait, what? 900 products? I was actually talking to a CMO yesterday on a podcast, but to her credit, they were able to narrow that down recently to 10 yeah. sort of buckets, because you can't communicate 900 products. It's just impossible. If you did, you know, you're kind of in trouble.
Yeah. That's like the story of the person who did the strategy planning session. They came out with 41 priorities and they said, yeah. Wait a minute, this is, you can't have 41 priorities. That's you know, contradiction in terms.
Yeah, we all need this. So the first chapter in the book, by the way, is clear away the clutter. And it's like, I want to be the Marie Kondo of marketing. It's like, get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that. It's not bringing you joy. Get rid of that, get rid of that. And I don't know if you've ever done or read her book or tried her process, but it's actually a lot of fun going through your closet and just picking up this shirt and saying, joy, nah, out. But do that with marketing. It could be fun.
That's right. Yeah. It ties the discipline. So, Drew, our conversations are always awesome. And this one's flown by. Let's bring it home. So we talked about some key takeaways as we went through the book. Oh, we just scratched the surface of what is, and I will say it is, again, having read a pre-copy, this is solid gold. Very practical case studies to learn from for any marketer that's engaged in B2B marketing. And so highly recommend it. Drew, as we kind of wrap up, you've written now two books, at least that I know of. And like you said, you've probably interviewed hundreds of CMOs in your work between your books, your podcast, and everything, and your day job. If you could go back in time to the sort of pre-author Drew, who was sort of maybe thinking about, you know, maybe I may want to write a book. What are some lessons learned that you could impart on to yourself now that you've done it a couple of times?
I think it was about 13 years ago, maybe a little bit more, maybe 2007, where I said, all right, I'm going to start a blog and I am going to write an article every week for 52 weeks. I made that commitment to myself. And in the process, realized, oh, shoot, I need something to write about. That's why I started doing interviews. Number two is the more you do this, the faster and better you get. And so, and these articles started showing up on fastcompany.com. And what I sort of, in the process of interviewing, you get better at listening. You get better at, and the learning that you get from this process, and I'm sure that you enjoy the podcast just because of that, you get to ask questions and you get to learn. So being a forever student has really put me, I think has been really handy. And so all I can say, my advice to my younger self would be start writing earlier, right? Start, make yourself do this 10 years ago. The only problem I have with that is I think I needed perspective. I needed the maturity that I had to sort of understand enough to ask better questions. And that's the hard part. So I don't know. All I know is that I've got my 10,000 hours in now, both as a writer and as a podcaster. And that is incredible. And that is sort of, you sort of become this almost encyclopedia of CMO cases, CMO experiences. And I just, it's invaluable. And so it's just, okay, now go write the damn book. and that's the part that's a little tricky here is I was writing the book. I got interrupted by the pandemic. I put it on hold. We created a 15,000 word version of it, which we put on the website. It was like the mother of all blogs. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that the book took two more years longer than I wanted to, but I'm really glad in the course of things that it worked out, because I wasn't sure before I wrote the draft before the pandemic. I wasn't sure it would actually hold up. So I waited until, kept interviewing, and then during the pandemic revised it a lot. And I think now we're sort of pandemic proof. Anyway, all I can say is writers write. You want to be a writer, you got to start writing today.
There it is. There's a theme here in what you said. It's action. Drew, awesome to have you on the show. We'll put all of Drew's information in the show notes, link to the book. Highly recommend it.
Hey, my pleasure. You know, I never mentioned CMO huddles. All I can say is this is something that we did in the pandemic, started a new book, and it's all about building community. So I just want to sort of throw that out there because it's kind of a cool story, right? Dan, thank you, by the way. I love what you're doing with this show.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great PS, an little tease for something extra.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, Drew, great. And thanks again.
My pleasure. Talk soon.
That's it for today on Top Quartile. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Top Quartile wherever you find podcasts on any podcast app. And while you're at it, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. And if you're interested in getting an opportunity assessment, head over to infusionmarketinggroup.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.